SBS Radio.
I'm Kerrilee Harding and this is NITV Radio. It's time now for our weekly science and technology segment.
I'm happy to say it's that time of the week again where we get to yarn all things science and technology, and I'm happy to be joined by Ray Johnston, Editor of Science and Technology at NITV. Good afternoon, sis.
Hey, Kerrilee, how are you?
I'm good, sis, and plenty of things to talk about today. Shall we get started?
Always. Let's do it.
Okay. So, we're taking ourselves now to the top end of Australia, to Kakadu. I understand we're going to be talking about food scraps.
Yeah, but not just any old food scraps, although they are old food scraps, 65,000-year-old food scraps, actually.
No way.
Yeah. So wow. We've got archaeologists are up there making a rainfall record from pandanus nutshells found at this continent's earliest known site of human occupation, which is extremely cool. So this research, it's giving us the earliest glimpse possible right now into the Kakadu region's environment. So you had this team of researchers and they're working alongside traditional owners there, and they've created a whole new method to investigate past rainfall at the site. And they can do this because these nutshells, when they examine them, they hold evidence for the amount of water that was available to them while they were growing.
Wow.
And this research is a huge leap forward because it showed that the region was likely a good place to be even when glaciers were everywhere around 25,000 years ago and there wasn't a whole lot of liquid water. We can now see that the region would have allowed for, you know, ancestors to thrive during really long dry spells and even attracted neighbouring communities from the surrounding areas to visit and stay at that time. So another thing that they've found in this study as well is that the driest time in this really long record of human use of the site wasn't actually during that last glacial maximum, they called it, when all the glaciers were around, but it's actually today. And Kakadu is experiencing the driest time since the beginning of human existence right now.
Oh, my goodness.
Which, you know, is pretty bad because the region's plants and animals, they're experiencing extreme hardships, and you've got feral animals, loss of biodiversity, disruptions to, you know, cultural landscape management, vegetation burning. It's all posing these threats to the health and well-being of the landscape and to the traditional owners there. So this research into this pandanus nut showing how special this area is, it really helps to highlight the importance of protecting this region. And hopefully it can make some people pay attention to that and really put some effort in to providing resources to all the people working up there so hard to protect it.
And not good news to hear that they're having their lowest rainfalls ever recorded, sis. Not good at all.
Ever recorded. And the fact that we were able to find this out by studying 65,000-year-old pandanus nutshells. It's just incredible the way that science, you know, Western science is helping back up, you know, the traditional knowledge that we've always had and helping empower our people to be able to fight against all of the issues facing our country.
So deadly indeed. Now to our next story of the week for science and tech. And I always love a good bee story, sis. What have you got to tell us about bees this week?
Oh, a bit of a sad one, sis. I'm sorry.
Oh, dear.
I know. We've got a quarter of bee species haven't been seen in 30 years. So since the 1990s, they've worked out that almost 25% of reported bee species, they're no longer being reported in the global records. But wow, there has been a really big increase in the number of records available. Now, the researchers have said that that doesn't mean that those species are all extinct. It might mean that they've become rare enough that no one's observing them anymore in nature, but they might still be around. So they're saying it's not what they call a bee cataclysm yet. but what we can say is that wild bees in particular, they're not really thriving. Now, there's been lots of studies about declining bee populations, but these are usually focused on a very specific area or a specific type of bee. But the researchers in this study, they were interested in identifying more, you know, general global trends in bee diversity, you know, figuring out which species are living where and, you know, how each population is doing, using lots of different records and data sets from all over the world, which can be really tricky and really time consuming, as you can imagine. You know, when all they really wanted to know was what species have been recorded anywhere in the world in a given period of time. And they went and did that. And in addition to finding out that a quarter of total bee species aren't being recorded anymore, they also found out that this decline isn't evenly distributed among all the bee families. So some bee species have declined by 17% since the 90s and some by 41%, which is huge. And the researchers say that something is happening to the bees and something needs to be done. And we can't wait until we have absolute certainty about what exactly is happening to them, because by the time we figure it out, it might be too late. So we need policymakers to step up and pay attention to this issue and put some measures in place to protect our bees.
And it sounds like they don't really know what to actually do about this situation, that this quarter of a bee species haven't been seen in around 30 years.
Yeah, we don't know what's causing the decline exactly. There could be heaps of contributing factors to this, but we do know how to bring bees back. And you know, that is to manage lands effectively and have more things like wildflowers and native plants growing wherever we possibly can to be able to bring those wild bee populations back to life. There's also quite a few locally really good organisations for dealing with when you have native bees creating nests in places they shouldn't. There's one organisation in particular that I love called IndigiBee. I follow them on Instagram and they're always showing transplants of native beehives from things like stormwater drains and telecommunications pits back into tree hollows where they belong. So there are definitely things that we can be doing, even if we don't know what's causing this decline right now.
I love that. And you know what else I love, Ray, is the fact that there are many people now in our capital cities who are embracing beehives on their rooftops, for example.
I know. It's so cool. And yet that's even when I pop on, you know, Facebook Marketplace every now and again, I always see people locally selling honey from bees that they've had in their backyard. And I just think that everyone's focus on bees lately, I'm seeing it increasing and I hope it increases more. And you know, hopefully we can get that same attention for our native bees as well.
Now, still on the same topic of talking about different species, and I understand Indigenous managed lands hold a majority of the world's endangered and threatened species, Ray.
Yeah, who would have thought? Indigenous managed lands are managed really well. But yeah, that Indigenous managed lands, it's over more than a quarter of the earth when we're looking globally. And a significant proportion of that is, you know, still free from any kind of industry. There's no industrial level human impacts that we're seeing in other places of the world. And as a result of this, Indigenous managed lands are absolutely crucial for animals. So a team of researchers, they worked by doing this thing with maps where they overlaid the maps of Indigenous managed lands with habitat data for almost 5,000 species that have been assessed for by the International Union for Conservation of Nature, they're called. And amazingly, for threatened species in particular, 413 of them, or about 41% of threatened species tracked, they occur in Indigenous managed lands. So they're of crucial importance to these species. And we're talking about things like the endangered red panda and the tiger in Southeast Asia. They have more than half of their habitat in Indigenous managed lands. And in Australia, we've got the critically endangered northern hairy-nosed wombat. 100% of its habitat is in Indigenous managed lands here in Australia.
Wow.
So it's really, really important to look after these lands, to expand these lands, And the researchers in this study, it's always really refreshing to hear them repeat back the things that we've been saying forever. You know, we need greater recognition and support for Indigenous people's rights to and relationships with our lands. You know, and the actual quote in here is that only through rights-based, equitable and respectful partnerships with Indigenous peoples will it be possible to ensure the long-term and equitable conservation of biodiversity. So it's just so important that we can look after our country the way that we know how. And seeing this evidence come through is just really heartening.
And so important. I know that up on country, up on the east coast of Queensland, where my family's from, they have Indigenous Ranger programs, which you're probably aware of, sis, where they bring in our youth and train them up on the local land and the issues that our turtles are facing in the sea.
Yeah, I sure am. I've actually been able to speak to some of those rangers on occasion, and it's a fantastic program, and it just makes so much sense, you know, having people in there that know their country to be able to help manage the country. I think there's lots of opportunities for, you know, the people with the power to be able to work with us here.
Such an important story, sis. Now we go from talking about Indigenous managed lands and threatened species to sport and how sport can actually fast-track numeracy skills for our Indigenous children. How so, sis?
I'm starting to think that maybe if I was better at sport, I'd be better at maths. These two things might be linked after reading this.
I don't know, sis. I was sports captain at my school, but my maths wasn't so good, so I'm an example of that.
Well, this is research that's come out of the University of South Australia, actually, and it said that greater sports participation among our kids is linked to better academic performance.
Awesome.
And this was a study that was conducted in partnership with the University of Sydney, the University of Technology Sydney, and it was a world first study that found that Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander children who played organised sports every year over 4 years had numeracy skills that were advanced by 7 months compared to children who did less sport. 7 months ahead.
That's incredible.
It really, really is. And the science behind this as well. You know, sports participation, it's already been linked before with, you know, better cognitive function, better brain function, and better memory in many child populations. But this was the first study to confirm the benefits in Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander children in particular. So, you know, as you know, sis, you know, playing sports always had really strong cultural importance to our people.
Of course,
and,
yeah.
Understanding how sports can boost numeracy among our kids is a really valuable step to improving health and reducing disadvantage. And, you know, when kids play sport, they're learning the social structures of a team, how to work with rules, how to focus their attention, you know, strategies for success, all these things. But they're also activating parts of their brain that are involved in learning and practicing lots of maths. It's, you know, how much time is left in the game? You know, how many points do we need to win? And it's all of these factors that the researchers believe is contributing to their better numeracy skills. So sport makes you better at maths. I might have to start playing.
I might have to start playing too. I don't think it's too late for me yet, sis.
No. We'll work something out. We'll go join a netball team that lets middle-aged people in, eh?
Yeah, I'm with you. I'll take that, sis. What a lovely theme to finish off with, sport today on our science and technology segment. Sports and maths, got to love a bit of that. You've been listening to our NITV Radio Science and Technology segment this week. Thank you to Ray Johnston, Editor of Science and Technology at NITV. Thank you so much again, sis. Been lovely.
Thanks for having me.
Talk again next week, eh?
Yeah, for sure.
Want to hear more stories like this? Listen on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from.